All right. It's lovely to sit with all of you in person and online. The title for my talk today is Honoring All Sentient Beings. All Sentient Beings. And this is going to be a look at essentially our four great vows that we recite every time we practice. Honoring all sentient beings. This word honor has been in my consciousness lately. And I'm reminded of, for many years, my father was a deeply religious man, but also very independent. And he liked to examine tradition closely. And he made this comment to me one time that really stuck with me. And that was, the Ten Commandments, he said, are really just one. And he said that if we could just honor our mothers and fathers, we'd be good. And that really stuck with me. And so hence this title, Honoring All Sentient Beings. What is that? What does that mean? What does that look like? I think one of the contemporary and maybe continuous difficulties we have with as human beings in our relationships in our world is that we are in need of respect, in need of being heard, seen, acknowledged clearly. In Zen, we often have this phrase, don't get caught in the weeds. And I think where we often don't see each other, don't listen to each other, is when we are caught in ideas. My idea, your idea, what I want, what you want. These perspectives take us away from the very basic, very simple practice of honoring each other. In Buddhism, we often say that this single, if you were to say anything about what this is, it could be simply to pay attention. But we might say it even more succinctly, more clearly, give attention. Give attention. So it may seem insurmountable. How can we give our attention? It's just this one fallible, temporary human being. How can we give our attention to all sentient beings? Putting aside any ideas of easy or difficult, of impossible or attainable, right here, right now, if we have one moment of clarity, through our direct experiential insight, we can understand that that one moment of clarity goes everywhere in all directions to all sentient beings. So if we can have that moment of clarity, sometimes we call that our original substance or don't know mind. Awakened mind. If we attain that moment, and we are all capable at any moment of doing that, in that moment, then we can see clearly. We can drop down from those tangled branches, drop down to the root, and give our attention to each other intimately across the globe and the cosmos in a moment. So first there's this space of before thinking mind. And then in what arises in the moment, we honor each other by listening. Sometimes we say, just seeing is Buddha nature. Just seeing is Buddha nature. Just hearing. Just feeling. Just thinking also can be Buddha nature. Moment by moment, we have to recalibrate and come back. Don't know mind. What is this? The gift of our attention. I had an interesting conversation with my older daughter, Katrina, recently about this. I guess we're all kind of the same sort, our family, but we were talking about integrity. And integrity is how we act with honor, really. How do we act honorably? And she said something really insightful, I thought. She said that there are really two things. One is that you have to be willing to look deeply here in your own consciousness. We leap ahead so often to checking other people, judging a situation, quantifying, labeling, all those things. But integrity starts with looking deeply inside our own hearts, body, mind. And then in addition to that, the next step is to do the right thing, whether anybody's looking or not. So this is the third part of our practice program. One, become clear. Two, then see clearly. Three, then find our fitting function. Act with integrity. And again, putting aside any notions of difficult or easy or impossible or attainable, we can take this on with some joy, actually, that we have an ability to give continuously, in whatever kind of physical, mental, emotional state we might be in. We have this capacity to give attention. And that gift of attention extends everywhere, everywhere. For example, in some simple, innocuous incident of waiting in line at the post office, some of you might remember an era when there was a rash of killings at the post office. When was that? That was
in the 80s and 90s.
And I remember one time in that era of just waiting in line, and it was an enormous line, and everybody was stressed, everybody was anxious and angry. And I went up to the worker, the postal worker, and just smiled hi, you know, it's not a superficial hi, how are you, but by our long-term practice, with what we bring to every moment is clarity, seeing clearly, fitting function. Whether we even say anything or not, we're bringing that to the moment. So I was just in line and said something, and she just, I could see her visibly take a long breath and smile. And she said, you know, you just don't know how it is over here. It's really rough. And so how we are, more than what we necessarily say or subscribe to or anything, can have a direct impact on others. This is how we honor all sentient beings. And to digress for one brief moment, what is a sentient being? Everything, everything is alive. I'll just leave it at that. Everything is alive. So with respect, with attention, we tend our moment world, which, by the way, includes us. Inside and outside become one. This is the first realization, aspect of realization. Inside and outside become one, not separate. So when we make, when we recite these four great vows every time we practice, we are making a promise publicly, which in the spirit of oneness is both to ourselves and to others, that we will do this. We will take this on. We will awaken. We will see clearly. We will act with integrity. You know, the four great vows are, we can find versions of them throughout history, throughout different cultures, in various sutras. Sometimes they're known as the bodhisattva vows. And if we think about what a bodhisattva's job is, according to the Buddhist tradition, to defer in nirvana, entering nirvana, until all beings are awakened. Interesting thing about this is that if we, again, step back from the language of these vows and look at the root, always look for the root of our experiential insight is that it can be no other way than that. That we enter awakening as one. So for many years now, there has been some discomfort with the way the vows are worded in our tradition. And I think with good reason. It just takes a long time, I think, to settle into change according to who we are in this culture, in this era. Our language, our karma around language. so that, you know, to adjust the wording so that it fits who we are and also meets the core of its, the vowel's intention. So just so you all know, the teachers group in our Sangha has met to discuss this. And what we did is we set up first a small group of three people. I asked for two volunteers to meet with me and to talk about how we might word this in a way. And it's so interesting because, my goodness, every word has some karmic attributes. And it's, as a writer, a poet, this is both challenging and interesting work for me to look at. So we've been looking at different possibilities, and what we're going to be doing is, first of all, I welcome any input that any of you online, in person, in the Sangha might have. What we're eventually going to do is bring it to all the suggestions, ideas from the Sangha, bring it to the teachers group. We'll come up with a hopefully something that we can try out as a size, you know, for the whole Sangha. Maybe give it a trial period of a month or something, we can decide. And then eventually settle on some vows, the wording of which fits us. So as we say it in our Sangha, the first vow is, sentient beings are numberless. We vow to save them all. One of the major things that has tripped me up about that is the a kind of dualistic framing of we versus others. For some people, it's the word save. It has some evangelical overtones that troublesome. So we're looking into that, and we're going to change it one way or another to make it fit who we are. Rather than going, so we're going to be looking at each one of the vows. The last one, I might say, for everyone that I've talked to so far, is good. We're good. The last one, the Buddha nature is inconceivable. We vow to attain. To me, this hits all the right notes. If you can conceive of something, it's interesting language, because if you can conceive of something, you're making something in your mind, and it has a shape, it has a form, and that's problematic. It's inaccurate from the beginning. So to say Buddha nature is inconceivable is spot on. And then to say we vow to attain it is also spot on. We practitioners of meditation, of Zen, are committed to going all the way. Not to say, the Buddha way is inconceivable, I'll do my best. No, we vow to attain it. And so naturally, it helps us and it helps those that we interact with if we recite these vows internally to ourselves and in together as a community. So it's already almost 10:30. I think I had it. Maybe I'll say one other thing about vows. What is a vow? This is already wedding season. If those of you who are have people in your network who are in that age, there are so many people who had to wait to get married until after the pandemic. So I've just been to a wedding, and I'm going to another one in a couple of weeks. And there's a lot of that going on, which is really lovely. And so there's that line in there, I vow to love and honor you. In some way or another, that is said. And I think we have to appreciate and acknowledge that in taking the vows, that doesn't mean that we are from this point forward going to be perfect and do all that stuff perfectly. It means that we have our direction. We have a clear direction for our lives, for how we love each other, how we give attention to each other. So, you know what it's like when you go to a wedding and you witness two people making vows to each other. You feel that. You feel that heart energy, that trine mind. And it inspires us. So whether, people hear us saying these vows or not, if we have that in our consciousness, we can inspire not only ourselves, but others. So what I'd like to do at this point is just after my talk is concluded, if the people online would like to talk about this as a group and just talk about the vows and you could do that. What we could do, Paul, I think, is just when we go downstairs, you could just leave this on, but muted. And that way, you know, if you like, you can talk to each other. If you have any suggestions, anything you'd like to offer in our explorations of how to reword the four great vows, send me an email. Send me an email. Already I've had many conversations with various Sangha members about the vows. But if you have anything additional to offer, please feel included in this process. This is for all of us. I would hope that it's something that we can all take on and own intimately. And then for those of us who are here in person, we might take a little time to talk after practice downstairs, if you like. So that's pretty much all I have to say. I appreciate your listening. I appreciate your gift of attention, your great courage and dedication to this practice.